Good evening. It's so good to see each and every one of you out here this afternoon, evening. If you guys haven't known, I've been working with the Church of Kettering for the past few months. This is my last Sunday here. I'm going to head back home and later down to Florida College in about 3 days or so. And so it's been really interesting. And if you guys know Jim Jr., Jim Grushon Jr., he's been getting to get me on with every Friday afternoon or so, and he's been critiquing me about my lessons. And he tells me what I did wrong with my last one and how I can improve my next one. And one of the things that he wants me to do better is to get an attention-grabbing introduction. It's one thing he wants me to work on. And so we went to Walmart the other day, and I was passing outside up by the plants, other such things. And they had potted plants, and I was like, you know what, I can do something. This is going to work. You know, I'm going to put a plant on the pulpit, and I'm going to get on my cell phone, and I'm going to talk and talk and talk. And finally, you guys would realize that I'm talking to the plant. But then I thought you guys might miss the idea and thought I was talking about how annoying it is when people leave their cell phones on during church. So then I was going to get a bigger one. I was going to try to talk around it. And then you guys would just think I was crazy. So I figured just to tell you guys about my introduction and leave the potted plant out. And we'll see how it goes. But the point is that I want to ask you a twofold question. Are you talking to a potted plant? That's twofold for the reason that one is, are you talking? And the second one is, are you talking to a potted plant? So I'm going to deal with the first one. I'm not just talking about talking in general, but we're talking about preaching to others or talking about Jesus to others. Are you talking in general? Are you willing to go out there and spread the good news of Jesus Christ? And the second one is, of course, are you talking to potted plants, which we'll get to later because that's kind of odd right now. But are you willing to go out and talk? We had Jim Lee come over for the past 3 weeks talking about how we can help ourselves help others to Christ. And he's kind of been basing this off of, you know, what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 28 about going to all the world and preach and teach, baptizing, making disciples out of all nations. And that's how he based his lesson, is that we're supposed to, that's our personal responsibility as Christians, that we need to go, which is an active thing, to go and preach. Oftentimes we cannot wait for the right opportunity. That we wait for people to come to us and say, are you a Christian? It's kind of odd that people will come to us when we need to go to other people. And that's our responsibility, is to go out and preach and teach. Not always wait for everyone else to come to us and ask us questions. Now the second part. Are you talking to a potted plant? Turn over, if you would, to John chapter 4. And if you remember the story correctly, this is what Jesus does in John chapter 4. A potted plant comes to him and starts talking to him, so he talks back to the potted plant. Starting in verse 7, there came a woman of Samaria to draw water, and Jesus said to her, give me a drink. Right there, Jesus talks to a potted plant. Now, for you guys who don't understand right now, in the Jewish culture, women were worth more, just a little bit more, than a potted plant. It's kind of harsh to think of it that way. But if you think of it that way, you know, here's Jesus, the Christ, God incarnate, Son of God, willing to take his time and talk to a woman. That's what his disciples are kind of concerned about in verse 27. It says, then the disciples came back and they marveled that he was talking to a woman. Interesting. That he spent time. Now, in the book of John, John uses a lot of metaphors. He uses a lot of contrasts and a lot of similes. And so if you look over at John chapter 3, you have the completely opposite story. Because in John chapter 4, not only do you have a woman, but she's also a Samaritan. And Samaritan and Jews, they didn't mix. They didn't talk to one another. They weren't friendly at all. And so she had two strikes against her. Well, if you look over at John chapter 3, here's Nicodemus. And if you were to line up the contrast on one side, you had to put Nicodemus on one side and then put the Samaritan woman on the other side, you would find out that, you know, one was a Samaritan, one was a Jew. One was a woman. One was a man. The woman had no name in the scripture, but we have Nicodemus' name. But not only that, it goes even a little bit further than that. Because the woman comes to draw at the well at noon, which is a very unlikely hour for someone to come and draw water. Which means that she probably was an outcast of society. Kind of followed up with the idea that she has five husbands. In chapter 3, we have Nicodemus coming to Jesus by night. Nighttime was when usually the rabbis would study. So it seems to indicate that he was studying to be a rabbi. And so the main point of chapter 3 is that even though Nicodemus seems to be such a great man, that he was a leader of the Jews, that he was a Jew, that he was a man, and that he was studying to be a rabbi, Jesus said, you, Nicodemus, of all people, need to be born again. A complete change of mind, a change of heart. Something new has to become within you. And it's interesting that that's what he says. But what happens in John chapter 4? The same thing. He tells the woman that, you know, she needs to be new. She needs to be washed in the water. She needs to have this new living water come up and well up inside of her to cleanse her. Same thing. Interesting that Nicodemus, a leader of the Jews, and a Samaritan woman who is an outcast of society, needs the same thing. And the point is that Jesus took the time to talk to her, even though she was a potted plant, if you would. And this is also isn't the only place that something like this happens. If you turn over to Mark chapter 2, there's a slightly different but similar story in Mark chapter 2. If you guys remember correctly, Jesus has just called Levi, and Levi gets so excited. You know, Christ has called him, and he's so happy that, come to my house, please. Come and feast with me. I want to make this big feast, and you're going to come sit at the table with me. And I want you to picture in your mind what's happening here, because it must be in like a large place that people can look in, because it's kind of open. Because pretty soon the Pharisees would walk by, and they would look in and see what's happening. And they marveled, and they criticized him. In verse 16, it says, why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners? Tax collectors and sinners. Interesting place to find Christ, isn't it? You know, the Jews were expecting a big military hero to come by and kind of push all the Romans out. But who do they get? They get a man sitting at a table with tax collectors and sinners. How does that make sense? In verse 17, he responds to the Pharisee and says, those who are well have no need of physician, but those who are sick. I have come not to call the righteous, but the sinners. He's saying that, you know, his point isn't to come and to conquer the Romans militaristically, if that's a word. But rather, he was to come to save souls. And those who needed the saving the most was the sinners, the tax collectors. The Samaritan woman who was an outcast of society. The people who seemingly didn't deserve it are the ones who need it the most. And so the question is, are you talking in general? Are you even willing to put God out there? You know, to make it part of your everyday conversation. And secondly, who are you willing to talk to him about? Is it just your neighbors? Is it just the people that you kind of work with? You know, the same social status? Or do you actually go out and teach the homeless? Speaking of homeless, it's interesting to note that Jesus was homeless. How many times we look down upon people who are homeless and say, well, they're just lazy, no good gluttons, sitting around and begging for money. Jesus was homeless for 3 years. Little side note there. But tonight what I want to focus on mainly is what would keep you from talking to a potted plant. And I'm going to suggest that the first thing would be fear. You know, sometimes we're just afraid to be around those type of people. And we don't understand them. We don't connect with them because we aren't them. You know, we come from a family that, you know, they always had money. We always lived in a house. We always, you know, wore semi-decent clothes. We always ate 3 meals a day. And for them to be not like us, it's kind of strange. Something that's kind of afraid, fearing. We can fear that. Not knowing how they're going to react to us. We've turned over Revelation chapter 2. Jesus makes an interesting statement here. He says to the church at Smyrna, do not fear what you're about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison, that you may be tested. And for 10 days you'll have tribulation. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. When was the last time you guys were thrown in prison for preaching Christ? And if you knew that you were going to get thrown in prison, would you still do it? But that's still his exhortation to this at the church of Smyrna, is that you need to preach them. Even if you're going to get thrown in prison and later be put to death. Because that's how you be faithful. Interesting, isn't it? Well, what about fear of rejection? You know, it's hard to, you know, go out there and put your reputation on the line. To go out and talk to people that you don't even know, or even people that you do know. Because how are they going to look on you? How are they going to talk to you, talk about you behind your back? In Luke chapter 10, verse 16, Jesus says, "The one who hears you hears me, and the one who rejects you rejects me, and the one who rejects me rejects the one who has sent me." Interestingly, it says that ultimately they aren't even rejecting you, they're rejecting God. And that's who we are, is we're God's. So why are we afraid of people rejecting us when they're not really truly rejecting us? But oftentimes our real problem is pride. You know, they don't deserve that. They don't deserve the gospel. You know, they haven't worked hard like we have. They aren't trying to be good people like we're trying to be. But think back, if you would, about yourself. At one point were you not working hard to be a good person? At one point in time were you a good person always? Did you not sin just like they did? Were you not in the same place that they were? Or they are, rather. Were your garments not as sin-ridden as theirs are? And if someone took the time to preach to you and to talk to you, and Jesus was willing to save you and to die for you, then can you not also talk to others? What about prejudices? Can that stop people? Can that stop you? I was talking to a preacher one time, and he said that he got funded many times to go over overseas. You know, went into China a few times, went in the Philippines, he went over into Europe, I believe. And this one church was always very faithful to support him. And this one time, he was planning a trip to South Africa. And once again, you know, he came to the church because they said, well, if you ever need help, just come to us. So he goes to the church, and they're like, sorry, we can't help you. And he goes, okay, is there a problem of money? Is that why you can't get help? They're like, oh no, you can't go preach to black people. They will go to China. They will go anywhere else in the world and preach and teach Jesus. But he wasn't allowed to go preach to those black people because they weren't good enough. Is that our attitude? And maybe not towards blacks, but you know, about people of lower class than us. How about people of higher class than us? Will prejudices stop you? Did those social stigmas stop Jesus? Did it stop the person who talked to you? Well, what if it's someone else's responsibility? No, it's not my responsibility to go and teach. No, not me. I mean, that's the preacher's work. Or that's the elder's work. Or that's someone else's work. You know, what did Jesus say when he said, you know, he said, go? He didn't say, well, you know, go if you're free, white, and 21, and below 45. You know, he didn't put stigmas on it. He didn't put regulations on it. He just said, go. Which means that applies to every one of us. The young, the old, males, females. Everyone has their responsibility to go out and preach and teach. But sometimes that we say that it's fear, or it's pride, or it's prejudices, or that it's someone else's responsibility, but the true reason is that we just have a lack of zeal. We don't have that fervor to go out and preach. And we have a guy back home. Well, not back home, but over at Kettering. We have a Bible study with every Friday. He's such a great guy. And we just recently converted him about 2 months ago. His name's Tim Leonard. He's just a wonderful person. And he said that he was part of like the Brethren Church, which is kind of similar to a Christian church, if you would, back when he was like 12. Pretty soon he ran away from home and lived on his own for a while, joined the military, got out, got married twice, and ruined both marriages by drinking. And here he is, finally 59, and finally something clicked in his head, and he said, you know, I need to find God. Because he realized that, you know, through everything he's done in life, that all the problems that he has, he can change that. That he can change his life around and he become a good person. He can stop drinking. He can stop cussing. Stop running around with women. And he can finally be godly. And every day he looks at his life and he sees what a great change he's had. And he's actually now friends with one of his ex-wives because he finally, you know, was able to put all those problems behind him and to be the man that he needs to be. And the point is that he realizes the changing power of the gospel about how it divided the bad out of him. It took that right out. That it cleansed him and made him whole. And he's so excited about that that he can't wait to go out and talk to someone about it. Because if he needed it that bad, he knows that someone else needs it that bad. And that's true zeal. I mean, that's what fervor is. The true desire for God. And if we can't sit back in our lives and realize how much it changed us, then we won't have the zeal to go out and preach and teach to others. But sometimes we just don't bother with it. We just don't take the time. In the world that we can work two jobs to buy that house and buy the extra car, that we can take our kids to soccer practice, make sure they get to band camp on time, that we even cut out time for the Lord's service, that we go out and we spend time with extracurricular activities, that we can find time for everything else but God. Does that seem right to you guys? That for some odd reason that we can take time for everything else, that we can always find extra time for whatever we want to do, but to find time to talk about God and to spend time with God in prayer and to sing hymns to Him and to worship Him and to study from His Word, we just don't have time. It's kind of odd, isn't it? That we lose that zeal and we can't find time for Him anymore. And it becomes someone else's responsibility to talk about him. And we forget that how much it changed us. But the fact of the matter is we have to get over our fear. We have to be able to humble ourselves and to show that who Christ is. We need to be able to realize that everyone needs the gospel, just like Christ did. He realized that the woman at the well needed it just as bad as Nicodemus needed it. That even though Nicodemus was so great, that he had all these good works under his belt, he so needed it too. And that it's our responsibility, and not someone else's, to go out and preach and teach. And that's what Jesus did all the time. For 3 years straight, that's what he devoted his life to. Left his home, left his family. He was willing to travel around and preach and teach to others. But we can't find time every day to talk about him. Interesting, isn't it? We must have that zeal. We must be willing to go out and to realize that we ourselves aren't perfect. That we weren't perfect. And that we needed Christ, and they need Christ now. But you need to start somewhere. You can't just go out and preach and teach and talk about Jesus if you never changed. If you never stopped sinning like you did. If you never stopped who you were. That's what Jesus said to Nicodemus, is that you need to be born again. Interesting, isn't it? That born again isn't, you know, small change here and there. Just need to kind of polish up our life in a few areas. When you're born again, you are completely new. Something different, something special. That you've completely changed. And we realize that the gospel will change us in every aspect of our life. Not just in our personal life and how our sin, but also in our family life, in our religious life, in our relationships with outsiders, that our work ethic will become better. That every aspect of our life will be so much different because we have Christ in our life. But you have to get Christ in your life in the first place. You have to be willing to have Him in there. And I made this point at Kettering that, you know, I'm leaving tonight. That as soon as I get out of here, I plan to hop in the car and drive back to Eastern Ohio, and then Thursday I'm going to drive down to Florida. And I realize that this is my time to leave. You know, my job's done here. And I can prepare for that. But do you guys have that leisure, that privilege to sit there and know when your time is? You know, if the doctor came in and told you that you have 3 days, or they have 3 months, or 3 years, wouldn't you make preparation for that? And if you make preparation for that because you know when it is, how much more preparation should you make because you don't know when it is? So tonight is your only time that you have for certain to do this. And if you're waiting there and you're gripping the pew and your knuckles are white, then why wait? Please come forward to stand and sing.